There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Second hour of the show, and let's put you in the picture of some live scores. Let's start with the Premier League. There has been a goal in the early kickoff. Southampton, Chelsea. Mark Archer's watching this.
Yeah, 34 minutes gone on the south coast. It's Southampton 1, Chelsea 0. It was Dusan Tadic who scored after 21 minutes. A smart run up the left-hand side by Ryan Bertrand. A great cross and a calm finish by Dusan Tadic. It's just boiling over a bit, this match here. We've just seen Morata with a bit of push and shove on Højbjerg, the Southampton player, and obviously Chelsea are very frustrated with the way their season's gone and the way this match is going. So 35 minutes gone, Southampton 1, Chelsea 0.
Villarreal taking the lead against Sevilla in the early kickoff over in Spain. Into the second half of that one, and the wonderfully named Rabaseda Antolin, or Rabba to his friends, has picked up the goal on the 36th minute for the visitors. So Sevilla taking on Villarreal in the early kickoff in Spain, and it is the visitors, Villarreal, who lead that by 1-0. Also got an early kickoff in the English Football League, the EFL, the Championship, if you like. Sheffield United taking on Millwall in that one. No goals in that one. And fascinating conclusion to the Championship coming around the corner as well, with Wolves looking very dominant at the moment and looking like they have booked their place into the Premier League for next season, which could be interesting as well, couldn't it? Because there's the weird setup at Wolves at the moment where Jorge Mendes, the super agent, has a governing share in the club. So there's been a lot of predictions about the fact that during the off-season, during the buying period, we could see some big names coming into Wolves.
Cristiano Ronaldo, who else does he have?
He's got just about everyone, isn't he?
Exactly. So we'll see a star-studded team. And I tell you the nice story I'm looking following is in that division is, I think, Fulham are second at the moment. And Fulham have
Cardiff
always...
second at the moment, I think.
Who's that?
Cardiff?
Oh, was it Fulham or third then?
No, Fulham have gone up to second now.
Yeah, and I always like Fulham. It's always, you drive through sort of South London there, and there's still that old, the same club in the same ground that have been there for 100 years on the bank of the Thames, and they can't develop the stand due to the residents being so close to the residential area there. But it is a, you go in there and it's still got the cottage and it's still pretty, it's just a really cool, funky little ground. They probably need to grow to grow the club, but it's just a really cool venue to go watch football.
Good club, good supporters as well. Early kickoff in the champion, Sheffield United against Millwall, no goals there. See, just going back to that point we were saying a little earlier on, SB, about Palace against Brighton, our feature game at 6 o'clock, being billed as a derby between the two. You'd think that Palace against Millwall, that'd be more of a derby, wouldn't it, geographically?
Yeah, I mean, as I've just researched, you know, it's called the M23 Derby, and it's basically based on the fact that several years back when they were in lower divisions, sort of in the 40s and 50s, it was the closest, they were the closest two teams to one another geographically. So I think the rivalry stems from that. But Crystal Palace, I think, it was either Wimbledon or Millwall, as you say. But I don't know.
West Ham always used to be a bit of a derby because they're not far apart, that's for sure.
Well, who would be West Ham's biggest rival?
Spurs.
So that would be Spurs. But
well, no. I suppose Millwall would be the biggest derby. That's where the love lost is. There's no love lost between those two, that's for sure.
Right, okay. So, I always remember it being Brighton versus Crystal Palace. I don't know why, but it seems to be a big deal for those guys.
I love it. If you're out there, if you're a fan of either of them, Palace or Brighton, tell us where it all hails from. Do send us your thoughts by texting to us on 4001. The Grand National today at Aintree. Ever been, Mark Archer?
Never been to Aintree, no, but I hear it's a very festive occasion. I'm sure you've frequented it on many times.
It's very good indeed. 8:15 is when that one goes off, the Randox Health Grand National Steeplechase, 4 miles, 2.5 furlongs, up in Liverpool. And it is, I mean, from a proud Liverpool fan over there. Have you been SB or not?
I've never been for the National, but I've been for other purposes.
The city is, it's just a brilliant place to be on Grand National weekend.
Yeah, it's insane. And, a lot of my friends and family back home would spend a lot of time over the 4 or 5 days for the meeting. But Aintree's quite a long way out from the centre of Liverpool, but somehow the centre of Liverpool becomes carnage every single night throughout it. But it's a heck of a time to go to Liverpool, I can tell you.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, 40 runners and riders. Indeed, line up for the Grand National, and it's It's a tough old race to pick, this one.
Got a couple of late withdrawals, so we're down to 38 for today's race, just because of weather conditions and goings. But it's one of the great days of the British sporting calendar. The biggest race of the year. Cheltenham Gold Cup, I suppose, for National Hunt Racing aficionados is deemed to be either that or the King George, which is on Boxing Day, would probably be the most competitive of races. But in terms of eyeballs around the world and the real sort of lottery approach, it is the Grand National, without a doubt.
And I guess Royal Ascot must be up there as the sort of the other one of the premier racing days.
For sure, yeah, but the difference there being obviously that's over the flat racing. This is over the big obstacles, the National Hunt, over jumps and then some as well, big jumps.
And this race has had its, not without its controversies and criticisms over recent years, about the toll it takes on the horses, and it's also very dangerous for a lot of the jockeys. But I believe that they've made a lot of sort of precautions to try and make the race a lot safer, and they've lowered a few of the barriers, and I guess they're doing what they can to make it a safer race for all concerned.
Yeah, they've modified a number of the obstacles, a number of the fences that the horses have to jump. In the past, they have been criticised for being too big, and also the jump-offs, because obviously you've got you come into the fence itself, you've got a ditch in front of that fence. That's been reduced because we've had a couple of instances in the past where horses have gone into the ditch and it's caused a pile-ups. But also the jump-off on the other side. So when you approach some of these big fences, what you don't realise is that there is about, you know, a 4-foot drop on the other side of the fence, which makes it even more challenging for horse and jockey. So there have been modifications. There are those purists out there that said you shouldn't be messing around with that, but obviously you have to listen to all sorts of pressure groups these days to make sure that both horses and jockeys come back safe and sound, or about is done for them. But I highly recommend it. If you ever get the opportunity, if you're ever up in Liverpool, in and around the this time of year, do make a beeline for the Grand National. Aintree is a very special place. It is steeped in history. As we know well, Liverpoolians can do, they do hospitality very, very well. They make you feel very welcome. And that is a brilliant sporting weekend. Highly recommend it.
Well, I definitely agree with you. I think anybody who goes from further afield than, you know, anywhere all over the world, if you go to Liverpool, you're going to be treated like a Scouser, and it's I'm very proud of my roots, let's just say that.
Right, I want to turn my attention now to the Commonwealth Games, because I'm conscious of the fact that we haven't really given it much airtime since it started over a week ago now. Plenty of medals have been handed out. Medals are being handed out as we speak. There are those out there, though, that are suggesting, well, there are those that don't know it's going on. It's taking place down on the Gold Coast. It brings together athletes from across the Commonwealth and former Commonwealth nations around the globe, and it has been a festival.
It begins with a dream. A dream of turning what you like into what you love, into what you live for.
That's the gold medal!
To all the athletes, to all the fans, to those who will come from afar and those who call the Gold Coast home, we say welcome to our games. It seems fitting that a place of unimaginable beauty is now poised to make a generation of new dreams come true. Dreams of going faster, further, higher. Dreams of power, precision, perfection.
Breathtakingly beautiful.
Dreams for yourself, for your teammates, for the flag you wear inside your heart. A dream of simply being there when history is written.
And Usain Bolt, the superstar of world athletics, and he's going to win this one. This is a terrific performance.
And when our time comes to host these games, to share our dream with the world, we will give our all in the spirit of sport. We will applaud heroes.
And she is Commonwealth champion once again.
Cheer new champions.
To think she's just 18 years of age.
And bring every athlete home. Here in our home. the dream.
Australia hosting the Commonwealth Games at the moment down on the Gold Coast, worst places to be, and they are bossing it as well. They are top of the medal board as we speak, going into the final weekend of competition. Australia with 73 golds, 55 silvers and 57 bronzes to their name, 185 their grand total, and their nearest rival is England with 122. So Australia taking advantage of home advantage. Mark Archer.
Yeah, this always tends to be a bit of a medal shootout between Australia and England. I guess you could say it's another Ashes type battle, Tom. The two biggest nations really in terms of sporting prowess seem to come through. What I found fascinating earlier in the week, I was looking up all the different countries that actually take part in the Commonwealth Games. And who knew some of the countries that are actually part of the Commonwealth?
Norfolk Island. Where the hell is Norfolk Island? They're on the medal board. They've got a bronze. Never heard of it.
Amazing. And this is the nice thing. I guess the Commonwealth Games, I think it had probably a wider and a more populous appeal probably a few decades ago. And it used to be the big games for a lot of countries in between sort of Olympic Games and World Championships. But I think it's sort of lessened its significance now as much as it, I don't think that even the top athletes pay it as much attention. Obviously, it's great to represent your country. It's good to win medals. It's good to participate in these events. But I think it's very hard now even to find countries wanting to host the Commonwealth Games. But it's great. It does renew some of the great rivalries in sports that we don't get so often now. We see India competing in hockey. I think India-Australia in the final of the men's hockey, which is, you know, India were a powerhouse in years gone by. So it's good to see that battle. And then some random sports as well. Sports that we don't see at the, I guess to say, off the top table as much as often. You know, lawn bowls, a good example there. It's an event with lawn bowls and also beach volleyball, so it's a mountain biking. It's got a bit of everything, the Commonwealth Games, Tom.
I'm surprised by some of the decisions they make, though, because no tennis. Tennis has been a great addition to Olympics in recent years. We had some great tournaments there. Squash aficionados have always asked the question, why tennis and not squash at the Olympics? They do it the other way around at the Commonwealth, don't they? No tennis, but squash.
Yeah, the squash at the Commonwealth Games. I actually went to watch the squash in Manchester when they hosted it several years back, and it was incredible. I mean, actually, I'd say it gave me an interest I never really had before. But I empathise with the whole Commonwealth Games thing, because it's kind of like the Winter Olympics. I kind of like the idea of it, but I just don't think it's something that particularly very many people care about.
Guess who rocked on in and stole the show a couple of days ago, though?
Where? The Commonwealth?
Yeah.
Prince Charles?
No, not quite.
Tom Daley? Oh, Usain Bolt.
Usain Bolt showed up just to put a touch of glamour on the proceedings, and I think he's probably been the biggest media story so far out of the Commonwealth Games.
Interesting events taking place down there at the moment, but you're right, you know, some good old allegiances being worn down there. We've had the first of the track as well action over the last couple of days. I know that England sprinters have done very well in the heats heading on down there over the last few days. And in fact, with regards to action today, there's all sorts taking place throughout the remainder of the day. The women's basketball final is underway as we speak at the moment, England against Australia in that. The Rugby Sevens is underway as well. The men's and women's group matches live down there as we speak. Table tennis action today. Shooting. We had a cracker in the netball a little earlier on. England reaching the final with a last gasp win in the netball semi-finals. And they have won both. England, this is, won both the 4x100 relays as well. So lots taking place down there at the moment. There's hockey. There's diving as well. So, yeah, I'm guilty of the fact that I haven't given it enough time, and I'm therefore feeling a bit guilty I haven't given enough airtime as well.
If you look at the medal table, just to give you a rundown, so Australia are dominating the medal table. They have 185 medals in total, 73 golds. Next best is England, 122 medals with 42 golds, and India in third, 59 medals, 25 golds. Then it goes Canada, South Africa, New Zealand, Wales, Scotland, Nigeria, Cyprus doing well. That's surprising. Cyprus are 10th in the medal table there, through to Jamaica, and then on to Malaysia. So many countries featuring that you don't hear about in sport as much taking place here. Mauritius, part of the Commonwealth Games. Vanuatu, Ghana, Seychelles, Solomon Islands. Everyone gets a game, Tom.
I think that's the other side of it as well. I mean, I have friends in Malaysia, and I know that the Malaysians do take the Commonwealth Games very, very seriously. So I think for the ones that are not going to be able to achieve overly too much just from a funding perspective, etc., in the Olympics, the Commonwealth Games is a fantastic outlet for them.
The other interesting story, we talked about this on Sports Tonight, is 8 athletes from Cameroon went missing during the week. There were five weightlifters and 3 boxers. So whatever security force do manage to track down these missing guys, be prepared, because the weightlifters and the boxers have left the village and they went missing in action, so to speak, on the Gold Coast. Let's see if they come back safely.
Fans are enjoying it, and why wouldn't you, down on the Gold Coast as well? Let's hear from some of the fans who've made the journey down to watch the Commonwealth Games on the Gold Coast, and also those that have journeyed from other parts of Australia.
The event we saw today was swimming.
Yesterday we saw the triathlon and also the men's team's gymnastics.
It was absolutely amazing. We saw world records broken and the game records broken.
We're off to the volleyball down at Coolangatta. We're really looking forward to that.
Can't get better.
I'm taking in 5 different events.
We used the light rail, which was easy to get on and off.
The transport services is excellent.
Volunteers are absolutely everywhere. It's so awesome.
Volunteers have been really good.
Friendly, they're so helpful.
My daughter's actually volunteering next week out at the athletics.
Sometimes I feel lost or need a bit of information, they're just there to help no matter where I am. I've seen Borobie everywhere, everywhere I look.
Yeah, and he just follows the shop.
Just follow the footsteps, and he pops up every now and then as well, which has been really cool.
And we even saw his footprints on the bridge. Now I got a jumper, Borobie.
Gold Coast, you've done it well.
So those are just some of the thoughts of fans down at the Gold Coast watching this year's Commonwealth Games. I'll give you a picture of some of the action that is taking place down there as well. In fact, let's get it on, Arch, because we've got Australia against New Zealand as we speak for gold in the men's hockey final. Something you'd be interested in, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be good. I think I think they're called the Black Sticks, actually, the ladies team. Had a win against Australia. They don't get many wins against Australia hockey. They had a 4-1 win to win the gold medal. So let's try and find it. To be honest, Tom, I'm not even sure what channel is showing the Commonwealth Games down here at Barasti, but I'm sure we'll find it. They've got so many TVs, so much sport on. We might just have to take off the TV next to us the second half of the Chelsea-Southampton match, but let's get some men's hockey on there.
3 minutes left in the third period in the men's hockey final. Australia not far off 200 medals at the Games, and it looks like they could be adding to it as well as they lead New Zealand by 2-0. As I said, 3 minutes left in the third, so New Zealand looking for a strong finish in that one if they are to take gold or if they're going to settle for the silver. The Commonwealth Games ongoing down in Australia on the Gold Coast. These are 5 things you need to know about the Games.
Like the Olympics, the Commonwealth Games is a multi-sport event that happens every 4 years with various countries from around the world. But what else is there to know about the Commonwealth Games? Here are 5 things that you should know. Number 1. The very first Commonwealth Games was held in Hamilton, Ontario in 1930, and was actually called the British Empire Games. The competitors consisted of 400 athletes from 11 countries. Things have changed a lot now, as the Commonwealth Games coming up in 2018 is expected to have more than 6,000 athletes from over 70 countries. Number 2. The Commonwealth Games is an international competition, but it only involves countries that have been controlled under the British Empire. That's why the Queen, or a representative of the Queen, always opens the Commonwealth Games at the opening ceremony.
It now gives me the greatest pleasure to declare the 20th Commonwealth Games open.
Number 3. There's going to be 23 sports in this upcoming Commonwealth Games, and it changes every competition. Those of which are athletics, swimming, badminton, boxing, field hockey, lawn bowling, netball, rugby sevens, squash, and weightlifting.
Look at this. This is an abiding memory of these games.
Number 4. The 2018 Commonwealth Games are being held on Australia's Gold Coast. Australia also happens to be the country that has won the most medals in Commonwealth Games history. Number 5. The mascot for the 2018 Commonwealth Games is Borobie, the blue koala. Not only is he blue, but he also has his own theme song.
This could be the time we can say it'll begin. Let's go.
So a little wrap down on the Commonwealth Games currently ongoing down in Australia. One thing we can guarantee, Mark Archer, you've been to a number of sporting events down there. The Aussies do it well, don't they? They put on these events very well.
Yeah, they're great hosts. They're very good sport administrators, and the fans seem to turn up. There's so much competitive sport down under in Australia. You've got AFL season underway, you've got the NRL going on, you've just wrapped up the cricket season, up on the Gold Coast, where there are a lot of things to do, beautiful beaches, beautiful part of Australia, a lot of fans are turning out to support their home team, it's doing amazingly well, but support all the nations. So great sports fans, great sporting nation.
Interesting point you made a bit earlier on though as well, about the sort of costs that are incurred in hosting an event like this, and I suppose that's one of the big struggles, because we talk about giving opportunities to some of the smaller nations that qualify to play in the Commonwealth Games. They'd love the opportunity, I suppose, to host the Games, but the cost that it incurred to that is that you're trying to weigh up the pros and the cons, and therefore it's a difficult one to take on the road, as it were.
Yeah, I think all major sporting events carry now significant hosting costs, whether it be a Football World Cup, whether it be Olympics, Commonwealth Games. I think the Commonwealth Games organisers have struggled to find hosts going forward. I think it was actually scheduled to be in Durban in a few years' time, and they couldn't pay the hosting bills, and then you've got to pay for the infrastructure, build stadiums. And then the big question is the legacy element, Tom. What is going to happen to these stadiums and sporting facilities after the games go on? Who's going to use them? Who's going to utilise them? Are they going to be? Who's going to handle the costs of them? Is it with the local government? So there's lots of elements now that make it very difficult to host major sporting events, and it's a struggle going forward. So it's balancing it up where the cities bid for any of those mega events that we just talked about. There has to be an element of financial sort of sanity about it, making smart decisions about when you're trying to build massive sporting infrastructure that has to be used after the games. We've had many examples of Olympic Games going to cities. I mean, Athens is a good example. I think Montreal, they're still paying off the Olympic Games from many years ago. It's basically almost bankrupt countries, some of these mega events. So I think sports administrators and governing bodies are very cautious when it comes to hosting major sporting events. There seem to be a lot now, and it's a tough task.
Shame, though. I've not been to a Commonwealth Games. SB, you have, haven't you? You mentioned...
Yeah, I went to Manchester.
You went to Manchester. You been to any?
I was in Manchester as well.
You went to Manchester as well. It's just a shame as well that we're having this conversation at the moment. And, I mean, I'm not pointing the finger at the marketing team that have got the contract for the Commonwealth Games, but the message just doesn't seem to be getting out. There are a number of people that I've spoken to in the last couple of weeks didn't realise it was going on in the first place. A lot of people don't really understand who aren't from the Commonwealth, or haven't been to one of these events, or haven't understood the events in the past, have not really... the concept of what it's all about, and I suppose more could be done in order to market it.
I think the other kind of negative about it, which as a British citizen you grow up not thinking it like this, but there's actually a lot of animosity towards the whole British Empire element of it, and I think because of that there's not that much exposure to it whatsoever. Certainly as a youngster growing up,
it was big,
it was huge, and like I said, going, I even remember, I think it was in 98 that Malaysia hosted it, and I know that it created a very positive legacy for them. But like I say, there's just a certain amount of kind of, you know, the British Empire just, you know, stole all these countries and claimed them as their own, and you know, so, and as it happens, the British Empire is being decimated anyway now.
So the opportunity there for Mark Archer, I know that you're a branding expert, marketing expert on all things sport. Could you rebrand the games?
Well, I don't know, but you'd have to rebrand it. It's been around for a very long time. It does have a historical sort of prestige.
Given those Commonwealth and Empire...
I think the key thing for me is...
Association.
Are you dealing with sort of the legacy of the Commonwealth, and a lot of countries now fight back against what was the former Commonwealth? So I think there's sort of a historical and a political element to that. But it's trying to make them relevant. Where do they fit within the Olympic Games cycle? Where do they fit within the World Championships? There's a lot of events like, again, a good example is probably something like lawn bowls, where probably winning a Commonwealth Games medal is probably the pinnacle of a lawn bowler's career. Yet for a 100-meter sprinter, say from Jamaica or Australia or the UK, a Commonwealth Games medal was probably not as significant as a World Championship medal or as an Olympic medal. So for different countries, it probably ranks different priorities. So the trick is trying to make it relevant and important in a very packed sporting calendar, and it's not as easy to say as to do.
And I think also when you look at things like for the Pan America Games, the Asia Games. There's not really the exposure for those. So why should this have the exposure? I mean, I'm all for exposing as many of the events as possible, but you know, why should the Commonwealth Games be treated better than the Asia Games? I mean, there's probably more competitors in the Asia Games just based on the numbers that we know of. But yeah, I mean, it disappoints me to even say it, but I kind of think that it's dying a death, unfortunately.
Because it doesn't really seem to, you mentioned about the TV rights there, and I think I know for a fact it's on terrestrial TV back in the UK, so you got it on those channels.
Definitely on BBC One.
Definitely on the terrestrial channels, but you're not seeing the sort of big Foxes and Skies and you know, the big money satellite providers don't seem to be cashing in on it.
I guess the other thing here about the other thing about living in the Middle East here is the Middle East isn't part of the Commonwealth, so the big channels in this region don't carry it because they're not part of the Commonwealth, and that I guess they, even though there's large expatriate populates, you know, like ourselves, all have an interest in it. It doesn't, for those local channels in this region, it doesn't hold much emphasis. Whereas, say, an Asian Games or an Asian Football Championship or something within the GCC or Middle East does have relevance. So that's probably why if we're not seeing it on our TV stations here, it's very hard to be sort of endeared by it.
But a lot of people have access to, you know, the major channels coming out of India, out of Pakistan, out of South Africa, and I'm not seeing it on them as well at the moment. So it doesn't seem to get into your front room.
No, you did right. And again, it's a packed sporting calendar. We've spent the week talking about, just look at what it's been up against this week. It's been up, you know, we talk about an Indian interest in it. Well, the IPL is underway in week one. So it's competing against the IPL. I think India, were third on the medals table. Be interesting to see how much coverage their medal getters. You know, you look at what it's doing in the UK. Well, we've had Liverpool playing Man City. We've had the United Derby. It's competing against that. So it's a packed sporting landscape. And if it's going to make a difference, if it's going to have a real relevance there, that's unfortunately the playing ground.
I wonder if the other thing is as well, because you mentioned Usain Bolt there, and he competed at a couple of Commonwealth Games. He put bums on seats to a few of the events, but they don't really seem to have a sort of standard bearer, do they? They don't have even your Australias and your New Zealands. They don't. I wonder whether athletes themselves, you know, pick and choose whether this is an event they want to take place in, or if it seems to be going down much more of the amateur road at the moment.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And I think using Usain Bolt as an example, you know, he has been the blue-eyed boy for over a decade now for athletics and pretty much carried the sport on his shoulders, and he's now not part of it. So, you know, it's going to have a lull. You mentioned whether or not you could have these the big names. Would the likes of would Murray play in the Commonwealth Games? If it was tennis was in there, would Murray play in it? Probably not.
And that's the clash it would have with the calendar at the moment.
Exactly. So what would he achieve? And he would probably hope that, you know, number 2, 3, 4, or 5 in the UK, in Britain, would actually play.
You look at the other big Commonwealth players just in the world of tennis. Milos Raonic for Canada. Is he going to play in it? Probably not. No. So then it's got to be, if it's not treated as a pinnacle of those sports, then it starts to lose relevance again if the top athletes in those particular sports treat it as a second class event.
Yeah, one of the events that's going on at the moment is the Rugby Sevens event, and it seems to be that they've taken their strongest squads down there, because we were talking about the Hong Kong Sevens last weekend, which were B teams.
Yeah, and some of the players have zipped across from Hong Kong to take part, and I think but if you're a rugby say a sevens player, you have your circuit, and we talked about this where it sits. You have your circuit every year. You go to Hong Kong Sevens every year. It's only once every 4 years you can win a Commonwealth Games medal, or be it with rugby sevens in the Olympics. Now you can win an Olympic medal. So I think in a rugby player's career, you get one chance, maybe two, to win a Commonwealth medal or Olympic medal. You think you want to grab that, whereas you play 10 to 12 HSBC World Series, you know, events in a year. So you'd think for a rugby player. And the thing about those guys, what they love
is... It's interesting though, because the Fijian boys, which won last weekend, have obviously gone down there.
Yeah.
Now, the other teams have decided that playing an entire World Series event one weekend and then backing up with Commonwealth Games the following weekend would be too much for the player schedule. Fiji haven't gone down that route.
No, but a lot of those teams, remember, they always tend to play two HSBC events back to back. So when they play in Dubai to kick off the year, they go down to South Africa the week after. So they're quite used to playing an event and then travelling. And again, I think for if you're a rugby sevens player, I think every sport's a bit unique. For a rugby sevens player, you get maybe one or two chances to win an Olympic gold or a Commonwealth Games gold. And I think those the prestige that brings the rugby unions and those players and those teams is enough to warrant actually putting a bit of effort in and sending their strongest teams.
We will take a short break. When we come back, we continue the conversation on all things sport. If you'd like to contribute your thoughts, we'd love to hear from you. Text them to us now at 4001.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. We are talking all things sport. Let's just put in the picture of the live sport that's ongoing around the globe at the moment. Early kickoff over in Spain, and it is all happening down there at the moment. It was Villarreal who were bossing this one through goals from Rabah and Carlos Bacca, who scored after 60 on the 68th minute. Since then, the home team have equalised. They have scored two goals in as many minutes, really. Nolito on 78 and Nzonzi on 82. In the meantime, both teams have been reduced to 10 as well, with red cards being showed for Ben Yedder and for Jaume Costa as well. So both teams down to 10, and it is it's two apiece at the moment. Sevilla 2, Villarreal 2. Steven Nzonzi, right-footed shot from outside the box to the left, bottom left corner. The latest goal to equal things up, which sees Sevilla back on track. It is two apiece in that one. What about the Premier League? Mark Archer.
Yeah, early kickoff today is on the south coast. It's Southampton hosting Chelsea. Southampton need a victory to move out of the bottom three. And are currently they're well-headed. It's 10 minutes into the second half. It's still Southampton 1, Chelsea 0, which was the halftime score. It was Dusan Tadic who scored after 21 minutes. A smart run up the left-hand side by Ryan Bertrand. He put a cross in, and it was a very calm finish from about 7 metres out by Tadic after 21 minutes. So currently 50 minutes gone in this match. It is Southampton 1, Chelsea 0.
Thank you very much indeed for that one. There is rugby as well. We haven't talked rugby as yet, so let's get on to the rugby with Mark Archer. He's been collating your scores over the last couple of days. A couple of games have been and gone already.
Yeah, let's start with Super Rugby. 5 matches today. There's been 4 results coming to us in Super Rugby. Early hours of this morning in Tokyo, the Blues finally had a victory in Super Rugby this season. They defeated the Sunwolves 24 points to 10. In Melbourne, the Jaguaris from Argentina, they had a 5 win against the Melbourne Rebels, 25 points to 22. Good comeback for their side. In Dunedin, the Highlanders put on a big second half performance to defeat the Brumbies, 43 points to 17. And in the match just completed this afternoon, it was the Battle Australian Derby match. It was the Waratahs hosting the Reds at the Sydney Cricket Ground, and the home team, the Waratahs, had a good victory, 37 points to 16. It's a South African derby, the match this evening from the Shark Tank in Durban, where the Sharks will face the Bulls. Plenty of rugby in the Northern Hemisphere this afternoon, Tom. 3 matches in the Aviva Premiership, getting towards the business end of the Aviva Premiership. 2 matches to go for most teams there. Gloucester hosting Quins, Leicester Tigers at home to Northampton, and Wasps will take on Worcester. They're all 7 p.m. kickoffs. 4 matches also in the Pro 14. And also a big match in France, which has just kicked off. I'll bring you a score update from that match shortly. It's Toulon at home to league leaders Montpellier.
Let's take a look at the Aviva Premiership, because as you say, we're coming down to the business end of the season for the domestic season over in England. We will have the playoffs, of course, a little later on. Exeter, slow start to the season, but they've re-established themselves on top of the table. They lead by 8 points at the moment. I watched them against Gloucester last weekend. Very, very impressive. They just play a really nice, abrasive style of rugby, Exeter.
Yeah, they're old school, aren't they? We don't talk about too many of the big-name star, flashy players at Exeter. They just seem to be a pretty tight unit. They don't lose too many players to international teams. I think Jack Noel is one. I think, was it Sam Simmons is the other guy that came forward.
I think they're going to lose a lot more because their front row is...
They seem to be a very well-coached team, a very well-drilled side, very well-disciplined. They play a certain style, pragmatic style of rugby. They have massive support down there in Exeter. They don't compete with too many other sporting codes. A tough place to go. I think it's Sandy Park. It's a tough venue to go, you know, in February to try and get a result. It's a bit of a fortress there, and they've done very well over the last couple of years. I was looking, I think last weekend, they started publishing all the financial tables for all the Premier League rugby clubs, and most of them all lose a lot of money. Exeter, on the other hand, is actually run as a profitable club, and some of the clubs are losing millions and millions of pounds. So well done for them on keeping the salaries under control, for keeping players in a good system there. They must have a good development culture, bringing youngsters through, and they're a good sort of team to a lot of clubs should aspire to be like an Exeter, to their Exeter Chiefs. So congratulations to them. They are still top of the Premiership with two matches to go.
Yeah. Let's have a look at that top four, because they will be the ones competing for the playoffs. The playoff system at the end of the Aviva Prem each year. Some like it, others don't. Are you a fan of the playoff or not?
I understand why they do it, but it's tough. What I find tough is if you win the, like Exeter, I think they're sort of 7 or 8 points clear.
8 points clear, yeah.
8 points clear. You might get a bye, you might get a home ground advantage, but then you're going to have to go play a final at Twickenham, which is great for your fans and for the players. But if you end up losing the final, it's a bit of, what was the point in the regular season? Why should we just paste ourselves? So I get it, but a league should be a league. And a cup should be a cup.
Espy's shaking his head over there. Are you a fan of the playoff system?
I'm not. I mean, looking at the league, they're 8 points clear. They're 14 points clear of Leicester in fourth place. I mean, imagine you're going to lose the final and you're not the champion.
Well, let's put it into football, in Premiership football. I'd love to, for Manchester, as a Manchester United fan, I'd love to be a playoff system now, because we've got a chance to win the title. So, City, who have been the best team in the league, undeserved champions this year, they're going to clinch it this tonight or next weekend or the weekend after. They're going to win the title. But imagine if we went through the regular season and then we say, okay, now you've actually got to go and play Liverpool in a semi-final, and the winner gets through to the, and then you just worry why you played the whole season. So I get it, some sports are better by it. We're going to talk soon on NBA playoffs. They play an 82 match season. And now they go into half the teams qualify for the playoffs, best of 7 match series. We'll find a champion in June. And then I can sort of see how it works. Different sports, so it works differently. But it's a tough pill to swallow if you're an Exeter fan. You don't end up winning the title after clearly dominating the league for the whole
Exeter,
year.
Exeter, Saracens, Newcastle, Leicester in those top 4 positions at the moment. If it stays the same, then those will be the teams that will compete for those playoffs. I mean, it works in the Championship, doesn't it, Paul Espy?
But I think it works in the Championship because we're not talking about the top team. We're talking, or the second team even. We're talking about the third, fourth, fifth, sixth. So that's where it's a little bit more realistic, shall we say. It's a little bit more fair, and I think it actually offers a lot more excitement in a small league like this. I just don't see how it can benefit anybody really, except for the fourth and third and second place team. And the first, what happens? Do Exeter just not pull out full strength teams as soon as they know they're going to be in the top four? Do they just stop pulling full strength teams out?
No, and there seems to be that sort of unwritten rule, doesn't it? And then, I mean, the way they try and balance it out, so one plays 4 and 2 plays 3, so you've got that sort of system going as well. But
I think also, just harping back to the basketball example, the American system, as much as it pains me to say it, is so much more gauged to spreading the success anyway. I mean, they obviously have the college system, then obviously they have the drafting system for all of their sports, and then you don't really usually have the dominance. You obviously have a couple of teams here and there, but generally you do get some form of spread, and this is a great thing for the viewer. But what I don't see here is anything like that. This just seems an unfair way of saying that Exeter, you actually could lose the league.
The one thing here I will point out though, Tom, is where it does play a little bit of a role is we see some of the clubs in the Premiership lose a lot of players to the Six Nations. A club like Saracens probably loses its whole 15 to 20 players to go off and play for England and Scotland and the various teams in that. It gives them a chance to maybe prove that they are the best club side in the competition against Exeter, who probably lose 3, 4, 5, 6 players, where it gives a bit of balance. If you see what I'm saying, my counter-argument against my original argument is it gives some balance to some of those clubs that get handicapped by having a lot of international players.
Yeah, but then the other side of that coin is, well, do your recruitment better and you spread it out, so you're not having 15 or 20 people representing nations.
Owen Farrell, you can go play for London Irish because you can deal with it.
Well, I mean, you've got the foreigner rule in the football, so I don't agree with that necessarily. I think it's a testament to Exeter that they've got through with, dare I say it, less able players that are not actually international level, and there they are winning the league. They are the Leicester of the rugby unions.
Wasps, Sale Sharks and possibly Gloucester all win in with a shout of making it into the playoffs if results go for them over the next couple of days. Newcastle up in third. I think it's been a great season for them. They okay up last season, didn't they?
Yeah, but they've always been perennial strugglers for a number of years, even if they flip between the championship division. Well, they've always seemed to be for the last few years in a relegation battle there. Surprises looking at that table for me, Tom, is Bath in eighth, Harlequins in ninth, and Northampton in tenth. Three clubs that have been traditionally very strong, but it is a very, very competitive league amongst the sort of the 12 teams, and you've got to play really well and really consistently to be at the top.
It looks like London Irish are going down, though. They have only scored 22 points. They played 19, just won three games this year. They've lost 16, so they've been the perennial punching bag again this year. So London Irish look like they will go down to the championship. I'm not sure who's coming up as well.
I think Bristol have won the championship, and they're a very well-funded club, and they've got, I think, Pat Lamb as their coach, and they've recruited some high-profile players to help them get out of the championship. They're going to probably spend a lot more money to try and stay in the Aviva Premiership next season.
Keep an eye on that one. That's what's taking place a little later on. We'll keep an eye on those games for you as and when they start. Let's go to the football, because Premier League, goal.
Yes, it's goal number two, and it's against all odds, it's Southampton 2, Chelsea knee. When just watching a replay now, it's a deep, deep free kick. It's terrible defending by Chelsea at the far post. A couple of players have left the ball, and I'm just trying to see. It could be Shane Long that's come in at the back post and volleyed the ball past Thibaut Courtois. But I'll confirm the goal scorer in just a moment. But 60 minutes gone on the South Coast. Southampton 2, Chelsea 0. As it stands, Southampton will move out of the bottom three if they can keep this result for the next 30 minutes.
Keep it locked here on Dubai I-103.8. You're listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Brasti, where the game is always on.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai I Messenger app.
Curtis Mayne has just doubled his tally in the Scottish Cup semi-final. Makes four. Some sorry reading for the likes of Chris McCarty and other Aberdeen fans as well. Motherwell beating Aberdeen by 3-0. What's the score in the early kickoff down on the South Coast in the Premier League?
Yeah, it's Southampton 2, Chelsea 0. 63 minutes gone. The second goal has just come. It was a deep free kick. Poor defending at the back post by the Chelsea defenders. And it was a volley past Thibaut Courtois from Bednarek, the fullback for Southampton. That doubled the lead. It was a first-half goal to Dusan Tadic, who had a great finish off Ryan Bertrand's cross. That was 1-0 at half-time. It's now 2-0 to Southampton. Mark Hughes is happy, and Southampton fans are happy, because if they can win this match against the odds, you would say, against Chelsea, who are currently fifth in the Premier League, it would mean that they do get out of the relegation zone. It's a packed bunch of teams at the bottom of the English Premier League fighting for survival. Southampton is one of those clubs, and a good result today against Chelsea will go a long way to contributing towards potentially staying in the Premier League, Tom.
Archie, thanks so much indeed for that. Let's turn our attention to golf now. Where are they playing at the moment?
South Carolina this week. Of course, all eyes in the golfing world were faced at the beautiful Augusta last weekend. The first major of the year has been completed. A disappointing day, for European golf fans, because a lot of high hopes were rested on Rory McIlroy, but he fell away, and it was Patrick Reed that has come away with a green jacket. He's not playing this week, but it's just up not far from Augusta. It's Hilton Head in South Carolina. Round two leaderboard, it's the scientist, Tom. Bryson DeChambeau is leading 10 under par, rounds of 68 and 64. He's a one-shot lead from two players, Siwoo Kim from South Korea and Englishman Ian Poulter, a one-shot back, 9 under par. One shot further back, Chesson Hadley, Brant Snedeker and Rory Sabatini. Notable other scores, Dustin Johnson's, he's gone back-to-back after playing at the Masters. He's 4 under par. Martin Kamer, the German, is even. Graham McDowell also on even. And a couple of big high-profile players missing the cut this week already. Luke Donald, Mark Leishman, Paul Casey and Charles Schwartzel. So it's Bryson DeChambeau, 10 under par, has a one-shot lead at the RCB Heritage. Let's have a listen to Bryson talking post-round after that second-round score of 64.
I mean, ball striking, honestly. I had a couple weird errant shots, but other than that, my ball striking was fantastic today. I was flagging it all day to 3 feet, especially my wedges. People discredit me, I think, with my wedges being a little longer, and, sometimes I don't hit it as close, but I personally think they worked beautifully today, and so it's been fun to hit it close and make a couple putts, and I'm in the lead, I think, right now. So
you are? Yeah. 2 years ago, tied for fourth in your professional debut. What do you remember from 2016?
Finishing fourth, that's for sure, and wanting more. That's definitely was on my radar coming back here last year. Unfortunately, didn't do it, but playing well this year.
What's the journey been like since turning pro to now a PGA Tour winner to a lot of things have changed?
Yeah, I mean, that's a 15-minute conversation if you really want to get in depth, but it's been a lot of learning, that's for sure. I mean, I had 6 months to learn a lot as an amateur, you know, when I left school and was prepping for the Masters in 2016, but that's just not enough to get comfortable out here and further your game to the next professional level.
What's the biggest thing you have learned over the past 24 months when you're playing for money?
The biggest thing, I mean, my putting has changed completely. The confidence level over 3-footers and 5-footers and even 10, 15-footers has gained tremendously. So that's a big deal. And hitting my wedges a lot closer, I've learned to use that to my advantage, honestly, and it's been great.
What's the approach heading into the weekend with the lead, a congested leaderboard on the golf course that necessarily doesn't separate everyone?
Yeah, I mean, get after it, I think, personally, tomorrow. I got to hit a lot of fairways, hit a lot of greens. My driver was a little errant on a couple shots, but I recovered beautifully. So if I can keep recovering, hit even a couple more fairways and a couple more greens, and I think it'll be just fine.
Question for you, because, again, this time last week we were getting ready to watch the third round of the Masters. We have since, of course, seen the conclusion of the Masters. After all the sort of hype and the build-up to that final round, were we cheated a little bit? Because it became something of a procession, didn't it?
Well, there was drama there, and I think all the neutrals hoped that Rory McIlroy would step up, find his A game, and take it to lead. And at the start of that fourth round, he had an opportunity. He could have been in a world of hurt. He pushed his drive off the first hole. He got very lucky with a fortunate lie in the pine cones there and got on. But he swung it round there, and he had an eagle putt on two, the par 5 second, and he missed a short putt. And that just seemed to take all the wind out of his sails. He didn't look like making a putt at all in the final round, where Patrick Reed looked like holding every putt he looked at. And he just had momentum. And Rory, he didn't strike the ball well off the tee, his irons weren't crisp, and his putting didn't look like holding anything. And I think he had one of the worst rounds, he had his worst round of the week, and he shot over par, where all the players made up a lot of ground with some low scoring. Paul Casey had a low round, Jordan Spieth almost broke the course record. They put some pressure on, but if it wasn't Rory going to win it, Patrick Reed was too far ahead to ever lose it. So he could get by, you know, having a couple under par with no one else really putting any pressure on him, and that's how it eventuated. We all thought Rory could get off to a flyer, find his A game, and really put pressure on Patrick Reed and have a match play situation, but he just didn't play well for whatever reason, and he struggles to put four really, really good rounds, solid rounds around Augusta to tie it in there. So it wasn't really for Rory to do, but I think we have some action from the South Coast, Tom.
Indeed we do. There's a goal in the Premier League, and it's gone the way of which team? Mark Archer.
It's back to Chelsea, isn't it? It's Olivier Giroud, the man who came off the bench and scored a lot of goals for Arsenal. He's now done the same for the blue side of London. He's chipped in. It's a cross to the near post. It's a great header, actually. Two Southampton players. He's come in between them. He's got a good header, and it's a really good finish there into the close corner.
Well, stems from a quick free kick as well, isn't it? And I think a couple of the Southampton defenders are caught napping as well, because they've got their backs to the play. And Chelsea taking advantage of that one. So have they got enough time?
20 minutes remaining. You think Chelsea have got a chance here. And that Southampton, this match means so much to them. If they get the win, they go out of the bottom three. So Mark Hughes is all encouragement on the sidelines. They've got the home crowd behind them. But currently 20 minutes remaining in the early Premier League kickoff. Southampton 2, Chelsea 1.
Right, we're going to go to the third and final hour of the show. In fact, we're going to be talking to our match commentator, Mr. Adam Bridge, in just a few moments' time. He's got the commentary duties for the derby coming up in a few minutes' time. And in fact, I'm going to be asking him why it is a derby. Crystal Palace against Brighton is our feature game at 6 o'clock. Adam Bridge of TalkSport up next.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.